Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to 2011 and look at the World Cup with Squidge. Let's go back to 2011 and look at the World Cup with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective Podcast. This week, the podcast that is looking at the second most iconic, second most famous and second greatest fixture between Italy and Russia in the Rugby World Cup of 2011. I am joined by Mr. Will Owen, who is the only person who can possibly understand that, and he's got a puzzled look on his face as though he does not understand.
I don't. Have we got an in-joke about the USA being Russia?
Did I say Russia?
You said Russia.
I did not mean that. This is why last week we said you should do the introduction.
Yeah.
I'm going to start that again. We're going to keep all this rolling. Yeah. It'll be fine. It is the second most famous game between Italy and the United States of America in the Rugby World Cup of 2011. So, do you know the other game I am referring to?
Is it a volleyball match?
No, it is the second most famous game of the Rugby World Cup 2011 between Italy and
I forgot about that detail. They play rugby in the USA. Rugby World Cup, don't they? I have no idea what you're on about.
You've got no idea what I'm referring to? Okay. What if I said it was not in the Rugby World Cup 2011, but on Rugby World Cup 2011?
Oh!
Yep.
I know what we're talking about. We're talking about Alberto Sgarbi. Are we not?
We're talking about Alberto Sgarbi.
Wait, so which game are we talking about? Are we talking about Italy 27, Russia... Oh, my God. USA 10? Or are we talking about
USA 3? It's because they had
3.
That one game played in Russia, Italy so 0. We just got used to it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, that is the other fixture, which you remember. So, as an introduction, we've mentioned a few times in past episodes that we still play the Rugby World Cup 2011 video game reasonably often.
Yeah, it's all we do. We don't like each other.
No, I can't
certainly
stand you.
Fucking hate you. So.
And I there was one sentence you said on one of these podcasts, and I thought for a moment that's the first intelligible thing he said since he was 4 years old, which was about the moment, because up until then I was giving you the benefit of the doubt. And about the age of four, I went, oh, it's just useless. What's the point in this?
Hey,
guy?
To be fair, when I was four, I did invent particle theory, so
that's not true. That's not true. That's not a fact. That's not true at all. Who invented particle theory, right?
In the Squidge Rugby World Cup retrospective cinematic universe, that could be true. We can make this canon.
No. Okay. The particle theory was invented by John Dalton back in 1802.
Okay.
Right? I've checked this. It was not William Owen when he was 4 years old.
Damn
in
it.
1999.
He's rumbled me. I wasn't years old in 1999,
I was
you fucking plum.
You were what? 2001?
2001.
Because it's 2001,
yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, well,
I was born in
1997,
I was 2 in 1999, you idiot.
It was even less likely. You were 199 years late.
Look, you're calling me out for being stupid for not inventing particle theory? You think 1997 add 4 is 1999?
No,
you
I was...
idiot, you Burke.
To be fair, no, you're 199 years off. I'm 2 years off. I think one of us is coming out of this better than the other.
I'm a liar rather than an idiot, but yeah.
The point I was making is that one of the most memorable games on the Rugby World Cup 2011 video game we've ever had, one of the most memorable matches ever, was between Italy and the USA.
Yeah.
So I was playing as Italy, you were playing as the USA.
Yes.
And what happened?
I realised earlier I actually got the score wrong. I said that the USA won 3-0. That's not true. Italy won 3-0. However, we went to... It was the first... Was it the first time we ever went to extra time? This is in like 2012.
It was one of the first times we went to extra time.
Yeah.
But it was certainly the first time we got to full time at 0-0.
Yeah. Because it was just a completely... Was it a completely boring game or was it like completely end-to-end and no one could finish anything? I can't remember.
When I asked you, what happened, it was probably a trick question. But the thing is, I don't remember.
I don't remember.
I don't remember what
we
happened.
Played a lot of games.
It was a game on a video game we had 8 years ago.
Yeah.
But I do remember the key moment.
Yeah, where you spread the ball out wide.
So we get to full time, yeah. Is 0-0, and I think one of us then boots it out and goes, we take extra time,
yeah.
You know. And me playing as
because
a tier
we were
one
quite
team,
committed to
fitter,
it being 0-0 at this point.
Yeah, we'd kind of just embraced it.
Yeah.
And there were a few, we probably turned down shots at goal and we, you know, whatever.
Sure.
And we then got through extra time. We got through both halves of extra time without any more points scored. And we got into sudden death,
yeah.
Which is 10 minutes right at the end, and any points wins.
And were we not in the
you
last
know,
play
any points ends the game.
As well?
We did. We then got through to the last play, and Italy had a scrum on about 35 metres out or something,
yeah.
From the American line. There was a good carry by Parise, and they get up to about the 22. Italy play about a phase, and then I chuck it out to the wing where Alberto Scarbi is
playing
stood.
Out of position on the wing, where you throw him off the bench, I believe. And then you just kind of stepped around somebody, and then just for a laugh, you just pressed the drop goal button and held it down. And aimed it perfectly between the posts and scored the winning drop goal.
Yeah, just nailed it.
Yeah.
From the corner of the pitch, 22 metres out, it was a
and
beautiful moment.
Am I right in saying that Alberto Scarbi himself is aware of this?
So I then interviewed Alberto Scarbi last year, yeah. And it was on our, I interviewed him and Kieran Crowley at the same time.
Yeah.
It turns out Alberto Scarbi, good lad.
Good to know.
Has... Yeah, really hairy legs and kept picking at them for some reason during the whole time. But yeah, decent guy.
Yeah.
But we didn't get to that quite. I had that, yeah, when we were doing the interviews, I suggested we should ask that question. And we then ran out of time because we were trying to squeeze in all the Pro 14 clubs. And like
boring.
We were left with the least time with Benetton, which was boring, I know. And I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah.
And I then said like, oh, I began to say it to Scarby as he was walking away as it was finishing.
Yeah.
And I kind of began to like, thanks. Oh, and then he was just like, I'm not interested, mate. I'm done. I'm getting out of here, only in Italian.
Yeah, yeah. That's a shame, because that's weirdly one of the things I best remember Alberto Scarbi for, is that drop goal, which he didn't actually do.
He's a big, solid lad.
Yeah.
He was also, that morning, I was put up in the same hotel, as I don't think I've talked about this on the podcast, have I?
Right.
I'd done an event at the Derby Poetry Festival the night before,
yeah.
And so I had to get into the hotel where they're putting world players.
Mm-hmm.
I was supposed to be there the day beforehand. I couldn't make it. I got there at like 2, 3 in the morning just because of train times and so
right.
on and having to get a taxi to the hotel and so on. It was the Vale of Morgan Hotel, where,
right.
you know, Wales
yeah.
stay and so on. And I then came down for breakfast, having got in about 3 a.m. and had to get up at about, I think like 5:30. I think we had to leave at like 6:30 in the morning to get to the venue. And I then head into the breakfast and I'm stood behind, Tommaso Boni, in the queue to get into the breakfast thing. I'm then sat at a table. They then take me over to sit on my own at this table. And over to my left-hand side is Alberto Scarbi and Kieran Crowley. And over to my right is... Oh, no, straight in front of me. The table straight in front of me is Richie Cockrell and Jamie Ritchie.
Nice.
I then get up to go to the breakfast buffet and straight behind me, straight behind me as I'm getting my scrambled eggs, is Scott Vardy. And trust me, I've never selected my food quicker.
Well, I know how this story ends.
Sure. Okay. So I get through this. I'm also like, I keep glancing over because you're putting all this together. You're like, okay, that's Richard Cockrell. And you kind of, you know, I'm so used to seeing him on TV. You're going like, it's strange to see him up close.
Yeah.
Fine.
And you can see Scott Fardy's knees in line with your eyes.
Yes. And you keep kind of glancing over and seeing like, because none of the Welsh teams were there, because obviously they were, you know, it's in Cardiff, so they were coming from nearby.
Yeah.
Whereas they put up all the Irish, French, Italian, South African teams.
Mm-hmm.
Not French, Scottish.
Yeah.
Same country, who cares? But I just kept looking over and being like, that's Ruan Pienaar. That's the real Ruan Pienaar
yeah,
sat over
weird,
there.
Isn't it?
Like, and everyone else, I was kind of able to process as like, that's fine. That's Scott Farley playing the World Cup final. That's Leo Cullen, who's won the Heineken Cup a zillion times. But Ruan Pienaar, I just kept going, I can't believe Ruan Pienaar's over there having toast. Like, Ruan Pienaar's buttering his own toast for his breakfast over there. Like, what's that all about?
It's really strange to think that. Was he good at buttering toast?
I think so. I think he waited until the last minute and did it with real precision.
Yeah. Did he steal somebody else's toast that they'd put in the toaster for him?
Someone did that. Oh, what was it? There was something. I put toast in the toaster and I then went away to do whatever, you know, to get something else. I came back and the toast was gone. So I can only assume it was like Alessandro Zani stole my toast.
I'd like to think it was. I'd like to think there's some pesky open side that snuck in and nicked some toast.
Yeah, Jamie Ritchie was there.
I bet that the Pro 14 counted that on Josh Van der Flair's turnover stats.
legally, Jamie Ritchie got a turnover for that, for stealing toast. He really leant himself over the toaster and pulled the bread out.
Yeah, and the toaster got penalised for holding on.
Yeah, really good body position on the toaster. And there's a lot of... Because it's that weird thing. As I say, you only see these players on TV either... You see clips of them in training, but you mostly just see them playing.
Yeah.
And so there is something weird in going like, oh, that's how... I was going to say James Ryan, he wasn't there. Who else was there? Who was... I don't know.
Reece Patchell.
Reece Patchell wasn't at the breakfast.
Ah.
Who was... Jack O'Donoghue. Like, he proper man spreads, you know? Like, when he was sat having his breakfast, legs really wide apart. And that was fun. That was kind of looking at it and going like, oh, okay, that makes sense. I can see that.
Nice.
Yeah, odd day. Yeah. You mentioned the Scott Fardy thing. Should we talk about that?
Yeah, so a Christmas miracle, right? So...
Yes.
Yeah. Do you want to go into that, or should I start?
Well, sure. What did I get you for Christmas that
Basically,
year?
For Christmas, you gave me, you know, something that was very nicely wrapped, and I opened it up, and in there was a Pro 14 bubble hat, and I thought, okay, sure, I love the Guinness Pro 14, me, I'll go around wearing this all the time. And then you told me that that bubble hat, the origin of it was that you didn't buy it, you didn't spend a penny on me last Christmas, but that's not the point, because you did something better than spending money. You stole that hat from Scott Michael Fardy.
Yep. That hat was... Scott Fardy wore it for a bit when he walked into the room. He then took it off and put it on the sofa. He then... he then interviewed blah, 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 blah. He then left, and he'd left the hat on the sofa. And I don't know if he came back in to look for it, but while he was out the room, I snuck it into my bag and left the room.
So you actually have one turnover on the Pro 14's official stats now.
I've stolen the ball from Scott Fardy.
Yeah, there's a ball on the hat, to be fair, so that counts.
The thing is, this isn't public knowledge until now.
Yeah.
And now, Scott Fardy would know who stole his hat.
That's true, because he listens.
He does, I'm sure. Or someone will pass it on. You know, someone will pass on that I stole the hat from Scott Fardy.
That's true.
It wasn't a scrum cap, so it's not, you know, it's not important.
Yeah.
But...
Was he wearing a scrum cap?
No, he was wearing a little beanie. Yeah. That he then took off during the interview.
That's the thing, was he wearing a scrum cap underneath that?
No, it's disappointing, really. He's not like Marty Holler, so I always imagine him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marty Holler once putting his scrum cap on back on to be interviewed.
He can't be seen.
Proper open side work
it.
There.
Yeah.
He's probably got a massive bald spot. That's probably what that was all about.
Yeah. But pressure's on me to get you a better Christmas present than a stolen hat from Scott Fardy.
You've got to steal from David Pocock next.
Yeah.
It's a little bit one up each other with Australian rugby players.
Yeah.
And I did, by the way, when I stole it, it was with the intention of this would make a great Christmas present.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Was in
for
my
sure.
head, as I
no,
did.
No, no,
like, it
for
was
sure.
like a. Yeah,
I,
this
I
is
respect
worth
the
doing.
Novelty of that. And, you know, I'm definitely not currently looking at Drew Mitchell's left sock, which I stole at one point in a secret mission.
Right, okay. So, the rugby match we're supposed to be talking about this week is. The USA against Italy.
Yeah.
It was not finished by an Alberto Scarborough drop goal. He did, in fact, not even play.
No.
Nor did Scott Fardy. However, the game eventually finished 27-10, with Italy being the victors.
Yeah. They were all called Victor.
Every single... It was weird, wasn't it? Yeah. When they all got in and changed their name by deed poll.
Yeah.
Like Paddy Power style before the World
yeah,
Cup.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like a Clive Woodward style moment of motivation.
Yeah.
Of like bullshit management. Of like, we should have named the Victor. Now. We will all be the victors. We'll win the World Cup.
I tell you what, so far it's working because they won this
game.
But
the problem is, right, Sergio Parise had to change his name to Champion, didn't he, to be different?
He did.
What a dick.
Bloody Parise. So, to look at the teams, we'll start with the American team, why don't we?
Let's.
So, Chris Wiles remains the key man in the team at fullback, with Todd Clever leading the side at seven. James Patterson's come back in on the left wing, and they've made the choice, the executive, by which I mean incorrect decision, to leave Blaine Scully on the bench.
Mm. They do change that quite early on.
For a good reason.
So, during the first half, there was a moment I was watching the game and I started to feel this kind of like almost rumbling in my tummy, you know, and I started to wonder what it could possibly be. You know, I spent a lot of time during that half looking at Martin Castrogiovanni, so I wondered if I might be pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's that often happens. Yeah. But then I realised I really needed the shit. So I paused the game. I went. I did a pretty enormous poo.
Right.
Like, it was a chunky boy. It was like one of those proper satisfying...
Oh, yeah.
As it hits the bowl.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Like, great. That.
And it wasn't, like, painful to shove out. It just kind of came out, like, hit the ground, bam. Like, it was nice. It was fun.
Yeah.
It was a good shit to have. And it was quite clean. There was no forcing to follow up out afterwards. It was good.
Like, did
it was
you flush
good
it?
Good shit. I flushed it. And then, to my surprise, it seemed to travel back in time and land in the midfield for the 2011
Jesus
USA team.
Jesus Christ, man. Okay.
So, for some reason, the shit I had was playing both 10 and 12. It had broken in half.
God,
and was
they
playing
were so
the USA
bad.
We are, of course, referring to the Senula brothers.
Yeah. This is just Roland and Andrew playing here. The Shalom Senula wasn't playing in this World Cup.
Shalom was the one who was more competent, wasn't
he? He was a bit more competent. He seemed like he actually thought about the game a little bit. He played both in 10 and 9. And
yeah,
he was okay. Yeah.
But compared to his brothers, he must have seemed
Roland
like Michael
Senula,
Jordan.
Yeah, exactly. Roland Senula looked like he's watched a game of rugby before. And Andrew Senula looked like he just turned up wanting a scrap with somebody. Or did he? We'll
what
come on
is
to...
Andrew Senula? Like, the USA has an enormous population. How is Andrew Senula the best they've got?
Yeah, it's...
Like, and I don't mean to be horrible, because they're Tier 2 players, and, you know, there's always a lot of... But I got a big energy from the USA team in this game of, in the way Tier 1 players will have stopped dominating whatever the division they're playing in at about the age of 14, 15, because we moved up to play age grade with, play, you know, the best players in there.
Yeah.
And it's only the truly exceptional players. It's the Parises or it's the Shane Williamses or whoever, the Dan Carters, who do dominate at age group level when they're playing as the best
in
their age.
That's the thing, like...
The USA, you look at this team and all of them are very used to clearly dominating in whatever Texas division they play
and
in.
And that's the thing, like, evidently, you know, with all players in international rugby, there will be players in the world who will say the best player I've ever played with is that player. And, like, there will be those players with the Senula brothers, undoubtedly.
Oh, yeah.
How they're better than Blaine Scully, I have no idea.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I want to again address, I don't need to say this, but I will because it's true. These players are all a lot better than I am, so I have no right to say this. I completely recognise that. And, like, there's,
just like,
you know, if you tell me to go out there and do it, I would completely shit the bed. I would have no idea what to do. I could not play international rugby. I completely acknowledge that. But cynically, it's my job on this podcast to talk about what's good in the Rugby World Cup 2011, and on the flip side, what is bad about the Rugby World Cup 2011. And one thing that's not given me a particularly good impression, I've not seen every game he's ever played, but the Senula brothers have not given me a very good impression.
But this is the thing about the Senula brothers, right? And I don't mean to just fixate on the one big negative. But Andrew in particular, I think Roland is, as you say, he looks a bit more like he knows what rugby is.
Yeah.
Andrew Senula, you can see, I can believe that he, because he's a big lad and he could, in theory, he could spin past the ball.
Sure.
Not with much accuracy, but he could.
Yeah.
I could understand if they gave him a couple of caps, they gave him 3 or 4 caps, and then went, okay, he isn't up to it.
Sure.
Right? He has 39 caps.
That's a lot.
And
caps.
You know what the worst bit is?
What?
I had no idea of this until today.
Mm-hmm.
Wasp signed him.
What?
He got a contract with Wasps out of this, right? Wasps
after
signed
the
him.
World Cup.
After this World Cup in 2013, he signed for Wasps alongside Billy Amuhelu, who was, you know, good solid winger, had a good World Cup for Tonga. Dai Young was in charge and signed them both. His comment was, unfortunately, we've been hit by a few early season injuries to our back line, so having Andrew and William come in this week has been good timing. They're both experienced international players and provided with vital depth in the midfield and wider. I'm going to ask you to take a punt at how Andrew Senula's career with Wasps went.
Played 2-1-0.
Oh, you're not a million miles away. He played one game off the bench and never played again.
Right, okay. And don't get me wrong, like, I always love to see these players prove me wrong. And I've definitely done it before. I can remember watching Jeff Hassler's first game for Canada and thinking, like, this guy's okay, but, like, I don't think he's going to go anywhere. I just don't think he... I remember playing against Russia in that first game and thinking, like, this guy's okay, but I think he's got a lot of work to do. And then, obviously, he came and played for the Ospreys and became, like, a fan favourite. and is a phenomenal player and has been ever since. You know, I love for these players to prove me wrong. And I'm sure Andrew Sanula's had a great, you know, a great career outside of what I've seen of him.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And, hey, in his one game for Wasps, apparently, I've managed to find a match report very quickly.
Right.
He threw a miss pass to Josh Bassett, okay. Who went on to score. He went on to step past Topsy Ojo and score.
Okay.
So, you know, solid. Good, fair enough. Yeah, and, yeah, you don't like to target the negative, but at the same time...
He was shit in this game.
Yeah. Should we continue on the teams before I move on to the other thing?
Sure. Italy. But, you know, it's back to their first 15 after they'd sort of coasted past Russia with their second team. Luciano Aquera comes back in at 10 for Bacchino.
Mm.
And
No, just mentioning Riccardo Bacchino.
Yeah.
Someone DM... I don't really check my DMs on Instagram very often.
Yeah.
And I check them like once every now and again and I never reply to them. But the one I happened to check like this period of 3 months was someone replying saying they like the podcast. I forget the guy's name. I'm sorry. I could check this and I should have replied.
Thank you for
I apologize
that.
For hearing it here.
Yeah.
And he wanted to point out that Bacchino in Italian is a slang term for a blowjob.
Oh man, that's brilliant. Fair play.
So I apologize. I'll find that guy's name before the end of the podcast.
Yeah, please do.
But yeah, thank you very much for that.
That's great. That's really good to know. Ricardo Blowjob. Fair play.
Good old Richard Blowjob.
Yeah. But yeah, no, Italy Ricky very blows. Much back to their starting team. They've got Parise and Bergamasco remain in the back row, but Alessandro Zani comes back in. And Fabio Semenzato comes back in at 9 to box kick the leather off the ball.
There is a drinking game to be done with Miles Harrison, who I think is fantastic in this game. You know, really good commentary, and I hold
he's a great commentator. He's brilliant.
Rugby you know, he's my favourite, other than Andrew Carter.
This game felt like a proper occasion watching it back because it had Harrison and Barnes commentating on it.
Because Miles Harrison treats every game like it's important. Like, he treats all of the Tier 2 nations like they're the All Blacks. And I love that.
And he doesn't
And he clearly
just
knows them.
Leinster.
He learns them.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
And like, he...
People, I think, unjustifiably give Stuart Barnes a lot of crap. I think, obviously, there's those comments about...
Firing all analysts.
Yeah, which I don't agree with. And I don't agree with everything he says, but I do think he's a good commentator and he's very observant.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
People say he's negative, but you have to be sometimes.
Yeah. And I kind of like in this game that he gives the USA shit, you know?
Yeah, for
sometimes you see in commentary on Tier 2 Nations, they're a bit patronising, and he isn't at all. He's a bit like, actually, this thing about the USA isn't good enough.
Yeah.
And they're playing well, but they need to shore this up or they need to work on that.
For sure.
And he doesn't sugarcoat it at all, and I like that. I like that he doesn't patronise anyone. But, yeah, so my drinking game is how many times when Semenzato does anything does Miles Harrison mention Alessandro Troncon? Because he constantly says, they finally found a replacement for Alessandro Troncon. They finally found the new Troncon.
Semenzato's good, but that's a bit strong.
When actually Semenzato is more like the new Joe Nolomu. If you watch the way that he has no idea that he isn't massive. And twice just tries to bounce people.
Yeah, yeah. There's that one in particular where there's a mall and he runs to the blind side, tries to barrel over like Anguena or somebody.
Yeah.
Like, Anguena's a
massive
lad. I think
it's James Patterson.
Right, Patterson. Oh, okay. That's fair enough then. And then holds the ball up for Castro, who tries to drive over and is sadly held up.
Yes.
But, and then like 2 minutes later, just the exact same thing off the back of a scrum again.
Yeah. So that's a good segue, that moment there.
Yeah.
Because to flip the running order, flip the way we do things, and begin with Dick of the Day.
Christ, okay.
Except we're not beginning, we're 25 minutes in.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about Dick of the Day, because I think this is the most Dick of the Day game of the tournament.
Okay.
In each of the other games, there's a lot of them where I've struggled to come up with a contender for Dick of the Day.
Mm-hmm.
In this game, I have 10 contenders.
10?!
10.
I had like 3.
I have 10. And I feel like I wouldn't be able to talk about the game fully unless I led on mentioning these are my contenders for Dick of the Day. Because otherwise it's taking up my entire talk of the entire match.
Right.
Man the match we can get onto later. That's fine.
Yeah, sure.
But I almost want to trail on that as you've mentioned one there. You've mentioned very strong contender for Dick
what
of the Day.
What we'll do is you name all your contenders, then at the end you tell me who's won it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I think we'll work through all of them as we go.
Okay.
I mean, the game begins with Andrew Sanyula putting in a pretty dick of the day moment. Did you notice this?
Is this when he tries that switch?
And he just drops the ball
in front of nobody, yeah.
In the first, 20 seconds of the game. Which was oh, I've got my dick of the day sorted already. And then it just continued to shift, and they continued to add new contenders in constantly. It was very, very exciting. Not long after, Chris Wiles does a... There's a fantastic moment with Chris Wiles. Do you know the one I'm referring to?
Is it... He drops a high ball, and then...
No, he takes a high ball.
Right.
He looks up, and he sees Mirko Bergamasco in front of him with someone else. I think there's one of the forwards on the wing as well. And he begins to do that kind of fancy, step. One way, step the other way, step the third way. And he would have beaten Bergamasco, but instead he steps back into Bergamasco. But before he takes contact, he just drops the ball.
I do remember this.
Yeah, it was a very, very bad, very embarrassing moment. He then looks very embarrassed and throws the ball away to the crowd.
It's like, you're the one we trust, Chris.
You're supposed to be our star player.
Yeah.
You're a one, and Stuart Barnes says about that point, he's made more mistakes in his first half than he did for Saracens all last season.
Christ.
We'll work through some of my dick of the days as we go.
Okay. I mean, so we'll break it up. Okay, so we've had two early contenders. Yeah, very early on, 3 minutes into the game, Italy play with a bit of width and then hit back into the middle, and Quinton Heldenhays tips the ball on, playing off 10 to Sergio Parisse, who strolls over for a try. Again, loving the fact that he scored the first try of the game. Just this lovely theatrical dive under the posts. And yeah, at that point, you start to feel like, oh, Italy might just run away with this, to be honest, because they look a class above in that first 3 minutes. They're just like, we have possession in your half, so we'll score. And it looked as simple as that.
It's amazing how... A, how effective, and B, how talked up what is now a really simple tip-on pass that happens on every single carry was. You know, and the people went, oh, what a beautiful little ball. What a subtle little bit of skill from Goldenhays.
And don't get me wrong, it is a good bit of skill, but everybody can do it now.
Yeah, exactly. It happens on virtually every carry.
Yeah.
Or if it doesn't happen on every carry, it's because the option is there.
And that's the thing. Whereas, because of tries like this, that's now the default way of breaking defence. Yeah, exactly.
Because that would happen regularly, and you could split open the Tier 2 defence very simply by having the man you'd think is going to clear out. No, he's running through the middle of you, and he's scoring under to posts.
Yeah.
Sergio Parisse would say himself. He's from Yorkshire now.
Champion Parisse, that is.
Hey up, Mads. It's me, Champion Parisse. So, Parisse scores. Grand. All good. All is very, very well. And then it kind of levels out a bit. Then that kind of, as you said, that Italian dominance doesn't really happen.
Yeah. So there's a couple of... The USA start to have a couple of moments. So there's one where Ngwenya starts popping up first and second receiver and sniffing for gaps. And Italy do defend him very well. I think they did their research on Ngwenya, even though he was quite quiet throughout the World Cup, and sort of knew that if there was a game that he's going to shine in, it's going to be this one.
Yeah.
And Ngwenya a few times got sniffs of space, but they dealt with him very well. There's one point... And I imagine this guy's one of your dicks of the day based on earlier discourse, but Roland Sanyula sees massive overlap outside him. He just kicks the ball out on the full.
Yeah. I should maybe... I had the Sanyulas as a joint dick of the day, so really there's 11 contenders.
Okay, fair enough.
But yes.
Yeah, because you didn't have enough. Yes. And then there's this... Italy have this opportunity to sort of put the sword to the USA a little bit more. And Luke McLean stabs through this really nice grubber kick, and Tommaso Benvenuti has to juggle it over the corner flag and ends up dropping it.
It's one of those, when you see it live, you think, how's he messed that up?
Yeah.
And then when you see the slow motion replay, you go, oh, actually, fair play, had a lot to do there. Because the ball has bounced over the plane of touch. And so, yeah, Benvenuti has to bat it back into himself, back past the touch, the corner flag.
Yeah.
And then try and regather it and ground it in one motion. And he can't
manage
it.
It looks like he's trying to perfectly recreate the one he scored against Russia, where he grounded himself with that grubber kick. It looks like he's trying to perfectly replicate that, and the ball just isn't letting him. So, no, it is quite unfortunate. But on the other hand, you do look at it and think, if you had, Adam Ashley-Cooper or something like that, they'd have finished that, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And Benvenuti is a young lad at this point, so...
Absolutely, yeah. But he did have that kind of brimming confidence through him.
Sure.
It's almost the best period of his career when he was really overconfident playing 13 for club and wing for country and constantly just pissing about like this.
Yeah.
I did write down Benvenuti.
You're terrible. There's
Thank you.
Then a point where Parise does like two or three bad passes in a row.
Yeah.
Which is really weird to think. There's one where Nick Johnson, who's playing number 8 for the USA, just totally fluffs a 5 meter scrum and gets stripped, which is like the number one rule of playing number 8 is just don't get stripped on your own try line. And then Parise does this reverse pass, which goes fine. And then just does a couple of really bad passes. Like there's one that goes into touch, and then another one which basically sends Semenzato down Todd Clever's channel, which isn't what Semenzato was asking for.
No, well, he probably like, was, actually. He's like, I could bounce the biggest player. I could do that.
But then the USA turned the ball over and managed to get a penalty.
No, hold on.
Get
Big Dick, into Big Dick Energy is their alternate fly half because he's Big Dick.
Nice.
And because he's Dick, because he's nice. Okay. Go on.
Yeah, so they managed to get a line out in the Italian half. And Sanyula, I mean, the thing is, it doesn't look like they have a set play called. I think their set play is just hands.
Yeah.
And he just, Roland Sanyula rightly sees the level of competence of his brother who's next to him and just misses him and just passes it to Paul Emmerich.
Like? You know, be a pro mode on Rugby Challenge when there's a button to call the ball to yourself.
Yes.
And providing you're within 30 metres of someone, they will throw a miss pass to you no matter what
Paul Emmerich did that a lot.
Paul Emmerich does that. He presses the circle button and they automatically throw a miss pass to him.
Yeah.
And
he's not in space
or anything. Really.
No. He's not in space. He's not running a really good line. He has to change once he's caught the ball. And he just powers through both Italian centres and just knocks them both to the floor.
This is a classic example of one of my favourite things to call in a rugby match.
Yeah.
One of the most worrying two words to hear in any defence.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that no defence coach ever wants to hear said, and yet I would quite like to say a lot.
Yeah.
These two words are your man.
Yeah.
Your man. Three Italian defenders go, your man, for whatever your man is in Italian.
Yeah.
Your mano. Sorry. To Italy.
Yeah.
And
Paul Emmerich just barrels through them.
Yeah, like all of them are kind of half-hearted. They're like, I'll assist on the tackle. I'll help drag him down if you do most of the work.
Sure.
And he just goes, no, I'm not having that. And charges right through.
Yeah. And then he manages to draw in the fullback McLean and pass the ball out the back of his hand to Chris Wiles, who scores.
It's lovely, isn't it?
It's really nice.
The burst
pass is so unnecessary, too, and I love it.
But the fact, because he has it tucked under one arm. And so it looks like he's going himself. Then he just kind of flicks it back out the back to Wiles and support, who dives over.
Yeah.
It's really... It was a, I made a noise moment.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, I vaguely remember that try as well. And just... I didn't remember quite how strong Emmerich's carry was. And, like, the fact that, obviously, looking at it now, you'd never set up a move where that's sort of the way the play is designed, with the normal back line, just getting your outside centre to just carry the ball in without running any particular line. You know, it's not particularly late he receives the ball. He just powers through them.
Mm.
And again, like, it's weird to see that, because that wouldn't happen these days, but it's testament to how powerful Emmerich was.
Absolutely, yeah. No, it's really well taken, and it levels the scores right up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think partly in the way the USA are playing, partly in the way Harrison and Barnes and so on are commentating, but it feels like quite a level game.
Yeah, it
And
does.
It feels like the USA are approaching this as not even we're going to cause an upset, we're the underdogs and we're going to come away and nick this.
Yeah.
There isn't that kind of energy. It's a, no, this is a level match against our equals.
Yeah, for sure. And it, you're right, there is a sense of belief to the USA team after that try.
Mm.
And Italy have a sense of, right, we've got to, you know, sort ourselves out here.
Yeah. In order to qualify, Italy needed to win both this game and the game against Ireland, the following match, and they needed a bonus point in one of those two games in order to get out of the group.
Right. Yeah.
So they kind of knew this was it. They kind of knew they needed the bonus point here because just beating Italy, you know, they would have taken a 6-3 win over Ireland, whereas this game they needed a bonus point, so they were really going for it. And they kick a penalty shortly after the Wiles try. But from there on out, once they get 7-3 up, and even though the US equalised 10-10, they start going for the corner and they just start going, no, actually, we've had 20 minutes gone.
Yeah.
We need to go for that bonus point.
For sure, for sure. And the USA then have this sort of party wrecker attitude about them, which, you know, they're pulling off very well. There's my favourite point in this in the first half is, there's Mike McDonald has this point where he's tackled and he gets up and just says, no, I'm not having this. And he makes a break off it. And he barrels off like two or three men. And powers on for about 20 yards. And then the next time he gets the ball is on the end of an overlap where Z and Gwenya tried to run around somebody and gave it to him. And he ends up flicking the ball one-handed behind his back into the field of play. And it's just, talk about big dick energy. Mike McDonald certainly had that.
Big Mac energy.
Yeah.
So Mike McDonald, interesting game, because he is fantastic in the loose. But at scrum time...
destroyed at scrum time.
Absolutely destroyed. And it is comprehensive. On the USA's own ball, Italy are shoving them off it and winning penalties.
Yeah.
All the time. Every scrum except one, which is on the USA's own line, where they really go all in and they manage to hold it. I think like every other scrum, Italy are winning clear penalties and winning 10, 15 metres.
Yeah. And it starts off this... I mean, firstly, straight after that McDonald flick pass, there's a point where Quinton Geldenhuis gets away with a very deliberate knock-on.
He
bats it away from... And Gwenny runs this lovely line, and Geldenhuis bats it really far away and just gets away with it.
George Clancy was good at giving at missing deliberate knock-ons in games when Gwenny was playing.
Oh, Christ, yeah. Thanks for reminding me.
2010-11.
Yeah. But from that point, Italy get a scrum. And then they have a few... They have a few drives and eventually they just decide to kick the points when the USA start infringing. But they kind of realise that, oh, wait, we could really target this. And they really make the most of that as time goes on.
Yeah, because Castro is completely on
he's insane.
He's the official man of the match. And
it's hard to argue with him already,
yeah. Because, I mean, he's carrying hard and, as we say, he almost scores the try. But he does score a try later on. But he is dominant at every single scrum.
Sure.
And it's one of those things you can't quite overset. I know I'm just saying the same words over and over again, but he absolutely smashes it. And I forgot how much I missed him.
Yeah.
And how much I missed having, you know, a bit like I'm so glad Argentina's scrum is now fantastic again.
Yeah.
And they're now dominating teams again.
For sure.
Because I miss Italy doing that. I really wish Italy had a fantastic pack again.
Yeah.
It'd be really good to see if they just had something they could fall back on and they could just go. Because I think both the props at the minute are very good. And I rate them both very highly.
When Lovotti's on the field, he's okay.
God, Forget Lovotti. The two that have been starting in this autumn and the Six Nations. Lovotti is just very, very stupid. He's just like him and Ollie Cracknell need to have a stupid off to see who is the stupidest player in the Pro 14.
Yeah.
Officially, the stupidest man involved in the Pro 14 is me for stealing Scott Foddy's hat.
That's true.
Otherwise, so yeah, there's you feel a bit for McDonald.
Mind you, if Andrea Lovotti was there and he tried to steal Scott Foddy's hat and then got away with it, he would have turned around and punched him anyway.
Yeah, he would have looked at him and just laughed as he did it. However, we mentioned the scrum.
Yeah.
I want to throw up one of my next Dick of the Day nominations.
Go on.
So, did you listen to Todd Clever's interview after the game?
No, I didn't.
No. So, Todd Clever was asked, basically, you were absolutely destroyed in the scrum, weren't you? It must have been tough to play with those of the conditions, right? This was his response.
Yeah, no, I thought the guys did actually quite well at the scrum. Not sure what some of the calls were.
Yikes!
Yep! I mean, the listeners at home couldn't see the face you pulled, but it was quite the expression.
Yikes.
Yep.
No, Todd, I mean, all love and respect to you, but that's just not true, pal. Guys got dominated by Castro and Perugini, like,
and it wasn't even a case of like the Wales Island game the other week. Everyone laid in on Reece Carey, and I think there was legitimate calls. Like Paul James in particular brought some up, and I had a few like where I looked at them and like, I just don't get that as a call.
Yeah,
where you go, okay, maybe there is a refereeing decision to be made. There's absolutely no way there's a refereeing call on the way Parisa is driving him backwards. Castro Giovanni is driving him backwards for 10, 15 metres on every single scrum. You can't call that as being, we're doing well at the scrum.
Bear in mind, in the first half, there's a point where George Clancy, the referee, calls over Todd Clever and tells him, like, oh, you guys are pre-engaging, just have a word with him. And then Todd Clever just goes, yeah, absolutely, yeah, that's fine. He doesn't question it then. Then at the end, he's like, nah, the public eyes are on me. Those guys were
fine.
It's
proper, like, it's gaslighting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a bit.
It's just outright gaslighting that actually the scrum was great from us.
Yeah.
Never mind the fact that it was, we were basically, our pack was on roller skates. You know, it was horrendous.
And this leads to, we'll skip ahead while we're here. There's a point where Italy are about 10 yards out from the USA try line, and they have about 900 scrums where they're winning penalties off all of them. And eventually Louis Stanfill, I don't know why Louis Stanfill, rather than one of the props, gets sin-binned for infringing. I assume he was offside or broke off early or something.
He must have dived in the side or something.
Yeah,
I
don't know. But they give away 1,000 scrum penalties, and they only just get a yellow card at the end. And as soon as Stanfield goes off, Clancy then says to Todd Clever, like, be careful because I'll probably end up giving another one the way you're going. Luckily, Mike Petrie saves them at the next scrum.
Yeah.
And dives on the ball and clears it himself and whatever. So the USA pack have a lot to thank him for at that point. But it says a lot that, I mean, I'm surprised that they only had one yellow card.
Yeah. Do you want to know how many penalties the USA gave away?
Go on.
Take a pun.
15.
21.
Wow, that's bad.
21 penalties.
That's so bad.
And you'd imagine most of them are scrum time.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And they won a couple themselves as well, which is baffling, but yeah.
Wow!
Go on.
Okay, Italy won 16 out of their 16 scrums. Mm-hmm. The USA won 1 out of their 3.
Wow.
Okay. Italy won... I misread all of that stat, but never mind. It was comprehensive. The scrum was completely comprehensive. And I know we're going in circles here, but it was a major part of the game. It was kind of what decided it for Italy. There was another moment in the second half, just to pick up on, because you sort of alluded to it. Another Dick of the Day contender, Sergio Parisse. Mm-hmm. Italy looked like they're about to drive over the line from about 10, 15 metres out, because they're that dominant. They get to about 5 metres out, and then Parisse just kicks the ball out of the scrum. And one of the USA players, I missed who it was, I think it's one of the flank, might have been Lavalla, then hacks the ball into touch. And then Parisse tries to call the line out to himself at the front, and it gets nicked.
Right.
And so he blows the same try twice.
Yeah. Okay, no, that's fair enough. I mean, and by Parisse, his scale, so I think that's quite a fluff up. Before we carry on, I'd like to just finish off the first half by talking about Luciano Walquera's try, where...
go on.
So the thing is, right, there's bits of this try that I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily by 2011, but I guess that's kind of what this is. The fact that Italy play with width, and that evidently stretches the USA defence quite a lot.
Sure.
Like, within multiple phases, they're playing quite wide, and therefore the USA having to work quite hard to fold around the corner. Then... Mm-hmm. Aguero has a couple of runners come off him, and he just kind of slides through this hole unnoticed, really, and dives over.
Well, yeah, it's part of my theory on Luciano Aguero, which I don't think I've mentioned on this podcast.
No.
But you know well.
Yeah.
Is that Luciano Aguero is the greatest rugby player of all time. Just, he deliberately would only show his true powers in passing.
Yeah.
He would keep it all hidden under the bonnet. It's like in a martial arts movie, when there's an old man who shows off that they can do all of this ninjutsu perfectly, but they never use it. You know, they never use it because they never need to. They're past it. I think Luciano Aguero was like that, because every now and again, he would have a moment, or sometimes a full game, where he was unbelievable and unplayable.
Yeah.
He would have games where he would put in a perfect, like, note-perfect fly-half performance, where he would be scoring wonderful individual tries. And then the following week, he would be useless.
Yeah.
He would be like putting in a proper Sun Eula of a fly-off performance. And yeah, you couldn't quite put your finger on it. You never knew what you were going to get with Luciano Aguero.
I have no idea if he's a good player or not, really.
Nope.
I guess he was all right. I don't really know. But I guess he took this try well.
Blowjob, man.
Yeah.
Valid. Ricky Blowjob, yeah.
Yeah. I guess he took this try.
But I didn't see it coming. I didn't spot the gap until he'd already dived through.
But, right, here's the thing of Dick of the Day contenders. Do you know why he snuck through that gap?
Go on.
Did you see who was attempting to tackle him?
No.
Because no one was attempting to tackle him. Because Andrew Sanula was stood in front of him, and he just falls over. Literally. And Stuart Barnes picks up in the commentary and asks, what the hell is Sanula trying to do there? Because, he just stands there and he doesn't attempt to wrap his arms around him. He doesn't attempt to, put his shoulder on him. None of it. He just falls over, straight up.
Can you imagine Dai Young seeing him do that?
Like, imagine, like, if Sean Edwards saw one of his players do that.
Yeah.
Right? If, you know, you've got Arthur Vincent playing in the French midfield, and he did that, he would be dead by full time.
Yep.
It was, it's really horrendous.
Does he trip himself over or something?
No, he just falls over.
Trying to make a tackle?
He's just not putting 100%. Look, he probably is, because he's playing for his country.
Is that kind of...
unfair for me to say that, but
yeah.
It just doesn't look like a real tackle attempt.
But, no, is it like that he's jogging across and he loses his footing or something?
He's not even jogging. He's still.
He's just stood still. He's
yeah.
Just stood static, and he kind of looks up, goes, shit, I need to do something.
And it's not a your man thing. It's Luciano Aguero. It's the smallest man on the pitch.
Oh, see, I thought it was just... maybe it's Okera using his magical powers and just bowling him over with a force.
If Sanyula put his shoulder on him, he would have battered him.
Yeah. Because he was a big lad.
He was a big lad.
Big, useful lad.
Yeah.
But without the uses.
Yeah.
So, okay.
That's Okera's try, and I was quite fuming watching about that Sanyula thing. It's funny, because I haven't actually picked my dick of the day yet, so talking about this is really quite informative for me.
Yeah.
But then the last first half try was scored by Castro on half time.
Yes. So it comes from a moment where Parise, in a moment of fiddum, goes down the blind side and then realizes nothing's on, so passes to Semenzato, thinking, go on, lad, you get smashed instead of me.
Yeah.
That's what our forwards are there for,
yeah.
To make sure the scrum half gets battered. Semenzato then does this kick, and the whole time it's in the air, you think he's kicked that dead.
Yeah.
And then it bounces perfectly out just before the corner flag.
Like,
it's
really
the best kick he possibly could have made.
Yeah. No, it was a really lovely kick by Semenzato to set up the position. And then Italy kind of keeps swinging from side to side. Benvenuti feels it back inside to McLean at one point when it looks like he could have finished it himself.
Yeah.
And then Castro
barrels
over.
Weird moments, though, where it feels initially you think Italy have done really badly. They've blown that.
Yeah.
And then actually just the sheer work rate of the USA players.
For
sprinting
sure.
Across,
oh, no doubt.
And
yeah.
It's down to them. It's down to this USA team is working incredibly hard.
Yeah, no doubt.
And there's
I think
a lot
it's
of points
gets
in which,
across. Yeah.
Yeah. In which just running your socks off can't stop a man on the gain line, but it
for
can
sure.
stop chances like that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what the USA had going for them was a sheer work rate.
Of course, the original break was made by a really obvious piece of obstruction by George Clancy, which I assume was Dick of the Day nomination worthy.
No,
he
no
gets
George Clancy
in...
is normally just not about the Dick of the Day nomination for being him. But...
fair enough. But he just gets in the way of Salvatore Perugini, who just waltzes straight through the USA defence. And just
it's
like,
Ghirardini, isn't it?
Ghirardini, sorry, yeah, Ghirardini. Yeah. And he just waltzes through and Clancy just kind of forgets about it. Just, oh, don't worry about it, sort of thing.
Stuart Barnes was fuming about
it. Was,
that.
Wasn't
like,
he?
Like, 5 minutes later, he's bringing it back up and saying, look at this clip, this is outrageous refereeing, I can't believe it.
Yeah, he was bringing it up in the second half as well, just saying, like, oh, now he gets something right, but... yeah.
Mm.
Anyway, Castro barrels over, and Stuart Barnes refers to Castro as he looked like an overweight vulture going over the try line there.
That isn't the maddest thing Stuart Barnes says about Castro in this game, though.
What is?
When he's given man of the match, Stuart Barnes goes on about a 40-second tangent about how... he goes on a 40-second tangent about opera. And the whole... Every so often, he remembers he's talking about rugby and ties it back to Castro Giovanni. So he starts talking about opera, and he starts saying, like, oh, well, in this classic opera... and he's like, Castro is a hairier version of this character in the opera. And then he'll belt out and sing in this key, and he'll say, and this is much like this bit in the opera. And then he finishes and says, yeah, Castro had a really good game.
That's bizarre. I didn't hear that. Yeah, but fair enough. Good on you, Stuba. But yeah, Italy going at half-time, 20 points to 10 up.
Whoa! You've skipped over a lot.
Have I?
Yeah. Okay, so, right before... before any of this happens, as I say, all those phases and blah, 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 the Ghirardini break... Semenzato makes a bust down the wing.
Yeah.
Offloads, holds the ball up. Castro looks like he's barreled over.
Yes.
Castro does not score.
No.
And he does not score because of, I think, maybe my actual Dick of the Day. I think the winner of Dick of the Day at the minute, but I'm not saying for certain because there's other contenders to come, Leonardo Ghirardini.
Okay.
Did you see this?
Did he hold up Castro?
Leonardo Gherardini gets his hand under the ball. He goes in to try and support.
What
and
a
if
dick.
I don't know if he does otherwise, but he puts his hand under the ball. And otherwise, Castro would have scored because he's barreled over the USA player trying to hold him over and got the ball out of the way. And instead, Gherardini puts his hand under it and prevents the try for his front row colleague.
What a cock block.
Yep.
Jesus, I did not notice that at all.
I didn't first.
Why?
Time, and then I don't know. I kind of then, when it was given as inconclusive, went, wait a second, why? Because there was no USA player nearby. So I reround the film, like the Manic Street Preachers, and went back and looked at it again. And just went, hold on, that's Gherardini. That's Leonardo Gherardini. He's held up.
Huh.
Castro does then, on the other side of the pitch, when they work it over, finish it himself and score.
Yeah.
Moments later.
Wow, I did not notice that.
Mm.
I'm speechless, genuinely speechless. Yeah. Is there anything more you wanted to add before we hit half time?
Well, just Castro scores himself then, doesn't
he? No, yeah. Well, yeah. There's a thing that I remember which we still sometimes reference from this game. But the as second half starts, the scoreboard reads 10-20 to
Italy. Yes.
You've got a big smirk on your face because you've just remembered what this was. When we were watching this game live in 2011, I was 14, you were 16, and this was again. This must have been a very early morning kickoff, and for whatever reason, you just then say, "Hey, the score's the year," and then you say backwards because it was 10-20, not 2010, but the year was 2011. So you say last year.
The score's last year backwards.
Yeah. And I just thought, I saw that scoreline and thought, oh yeah, that was when this happened. So
I forgot that completely, yeah.
Yeah, that was this game.
And forgot that moment. I forgot that was this game. Okay.
Yeah. But we still quite regularly reference that, I think.
Yeah. Whenever the score is the year.
Or the score is 10-20.
Oh, now, yeah. Huh.
Yeah, there's a novelty moment of our experience watching this game.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So the second half kicks off. It's 10-20. The first notable thing, I think, is that Mike Petrie does this really lovely chip for Paul Emmerich chases it in the end. And Stuart Barnes makes the point in commentary that if it was Nguyenya chasing that, he would have scored.
Yes.
Emmerich ends up catching it, just brushes the touchline, and has to flick it behind his back. Sadly, the touch judge's flag's gone up, so,
yeah. You
know, no attacking opportunity in the end. But again, like, it was the last sort of great moment of Petrie shining in this World Cup, because he had such a good tournament. And you alluded to this before, talking about this with Blaine Scully. Remember that time we had Blaine Scully on the podcast?
Yeah. Speaking of having Blaine Scully on, the USA get 4 minutes into the half and go, "That'd be a good idea, wouldn't it?" And they bring off Andrew Sonula.
Yep.
And
because he's
they
shit.
Stick on, yes, Blaine Maximus Scully.
Because he's amazing and handsome.
Yeah, his middle name is not Maximus, but it might as well be, because we are all entertained when we see it.
Yeah.
That was an accidental. I don't know why I said his middle name was Maximus. And we then linked it back to Gladiator in a desperate attempt to make it relevant.
Sure.
I just added that in.
Yeah, sure. His middle name is Hanson.
Yes.
I've just seen.
And at the time, he had the Mbop haircut as well.
And I said Hanson, not handsome. But I personally call him Blaine Handsome Scully. So.
And because he's a Rugby World Cup winner at heart, like Steve Hansen.
Yes, he's better than Steve Hansen.
Yeah, so, he had the Mbop haircut, all of it. He's perfect.
Yep. So Blaine Handsome Scully. I actually have him written down here as Handsome Scully when he comes onto the pitch. And then Italy end up having a bit of an attack. This isn't related to Blaine Scully, but Italy have an attack. Gonzalo Garcia, of all people, makes this really nice break where he offloads to Semizato. Castro and Parise show these lovely hands to get it down the line. And Quinton Gellin-Hayes has a two-on-one. He just has to fix his man and pass the ball. And then it's an easy try. And he just doesn't pass because he's a moron. I like Gellin-Hayes, but why does he not pass that ball?
I couldn't tell you.
And then, right, to make it worse, Todd Clever gets the ball out wide and boots the ball downfield. And straight from the counter-attack, Benvenuti gets this great run where he streaks down the wing and he has a man outside. All he has to do is fix the man and pass it, and they've scored the bonus point try. And Paul Emerick clatters him because he doesn't pass the ball. Like, why?
Benvenuti was a dick of the day contender for me there, because at least Gellin-Hayes is a kind of, you know, he's a second row. He's come through from playing like
maybe doesn't trust himself to pass. Yeah,
and I think he, because it's quite quick between him receiving the ball and kind of having to time it and so on. And I have some sympathy for that.
Sure,
you know, it's not great. He should have given the pass. He should have been able to give the pass, but it's not a dick of the day contention moment.
Sure.
Whereas Benvenuti begins to, and I think he tries to throw the dummy because he's kind of shaping to pass and he changes his mind and brings the ball back in as normal. And Paul Emerick rightly clatters him.
Yeah. And
it's McLean outside him as well. Like, McLean is waltzing that in.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's one of those things that, like, Benvenuti, that's his bread and butter. Like, he does that in training every day, you know, fixing those opportunities and making sure that pass is released, and he just doesn't. Yeah, it was infuriating. But yeah,
absolutely. Like, that was that's another dick of the day to tick off right now.
Working through that list. Then there's a point where Luciano Roquera makes a break and does this really nice floated pass out to Mirko Bergamasco.
Mate.
Yeah.
Just best player of all time.
Yeah, he's good, isn't he?
And you're thinking, this is him. This is Luciano Roquera. This is where he's proving that he is the Kung Fu ninjutsu master that we all knew he was. And this beautiful floater ball goes out to Bergamasco, who charges in, can't make it to line, takes contact, and Italy go to recycle the ball, and they throw it straight away, kind of to Luciano Roquera, who, in that kind of very Richie Mwanga style, loves touches and wants to get the ball in his hands all the time, so he can be magic. You know, it's like the Mark Elley thing he used to say, that if I touch the ball three times in the movement, I'm going to score. If I touch it twice, we'll score. If I touch it once, who knows? I've read that backwards. However, you're thinking, Luciano Roquera, the greatest fly half of all time. He's going to do it. He's going to prove it. And then he realizes he's had two moments of being class so far in this game, so he has to prove that he's human. And he chucks the ball straight to the floor.
I have no idea what happens there. But our Lord and Saviour comes along and goes, no problem, lads.
Sergio Parise is playing.
Yes.
All right.
Sergio Parise just comes up and just kicks the ball to himself really casually. Like, it's just rolling across the floor. And Parise just sticks his toe on it and it just lands perfectly in his hands. And, like, no attention was paid to that other than by champion himself.
I heard that as he sticks his tongue on it. Like, he's Bryce Heem.
Yes.
Just licking everything, trying to get COVID.
It's his way of trying to unconventionally score a try, is just by licking the ball over the try. Like, you know,
it's not a knock-on. It's not a knock-on. You can lick the ball forward as
exactly,
much as you want.
Right?
Legally, yeah.
So, I wonder what the actual law is surrounding that.
It happened in a game recently. It was a game you weren't watching. What? I was watching a game this weekend.
Someone licked a rugby ball. This weekend, we're in a pandemic.
No, I think it was the Argentina-Australia game, where someone threw the ball at another player's head and they volleyed it. Volleyed it over the defence, then I think it might have been Delgi or someone. Volleyed it over the defence with their head, like headed it over, regathered it on the floor.
David Lemmy once scored a try playing for Bristol where he did a flying header to assist the try for somebody, and it was disallowed by a referee. And it's just like, do you hate fun? No. Why would you disallow? And David Lemmy, of all players, doing a flying, diving head, like Van Persie-style header to assist a try for somebody going over somebody's head. Like, how much do you have to hate fun to disallow that?
Honestly, it was probably George Clancy.
Probably. You all right?
Yeah, no, I just knocked over the tripod that I used to record the feed. so keep that in. That's fine.
Yeah, sure.
I just accidentally knocked it over. It's fine. Nice. It's all going to be good. I'll pick it back up. The microphone's fallen on the floor as well. All's fine. All's fine. Wood rugby, don't care. Go on.
Yeah, no, another point. So Petri, after all these scrums, saves the USA, clears the ball. And Italy have a nice little counter. And Gonzalo Garcia gets the ball and thinks, you know what? I've got a good idea. Spacing behind the defence. I'm going to stab through a little grubber kick. Sounds feasible, right?
Yes.
Going to stab through a little grubber kick from Mirko Bergamasco to outrun the fastest winger in world rugby.
This is one of my Dick of the Day nominations. Garcia looks up, sees the space, sees... I know, why don't we create a foot race between Mirko Bergamasco and Zian Gwenya? What a great idea that is.
And there's only one way that's going. And Gwenya just jogs and regathers
and
the ball.
And Gwenya's walking. And Gwenya's got an ice cream in his hand. And he gathers it.
And like kind of puts
and
the
Bergamasco's really busting a gut. And he isn't even on screen when Bergamasco grounds
and
the ball.
Kind of,
and Gwenya grounds the ball.
Yeah, and Gwenya puts the ball down. And he's just kind of like bewildered. He's by like, why did they bother trying to... Like, they know I'm fast, don't they? Like... Because he's used to teams doing analysis on him and just going, okay, this guy, fast.
Yeah.
Because you don't need to know him for long to figure that bit out, right? There are flaws in Ngwenya's game, you know? I'm sure there are. I mean, he's a very good player. I'm sure there's something wrong with his game that a team analyst, I'm not one of those, will be able to figure out by watching him a bit more in detail. But one thing that he's not bad at is speed.
Yes. No one's looking at him and going, okay, we might be able to catch their 14 out wide.
Especially
he's lacking a bit of pace.
When your winger is Mirko Bergamasco, he's not looking at him and going, fancy taking him on the outside, boys.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like seeing the opposition got a Ferrari and going, I know, we'll send a lawnmower against it.
And it's not just that, like, if Bergamasco being Bergamasco fancy taking him on the outside, okay, that's one thing. But Gonzalo Garcia trusted him to do that? Like, his other player trusted him to do that.
He went, you've got this, Mirko. You've got this. I believe in you.
It's a very bewildering moment.
I think Mauro Bergamasco would have stood a greater chance.
Genuinely.
Because at least he would have put a cheap shot in or something afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
Or he'd have tried to trip and Gwenya up. Though Gwenya had a head start as well.
Yeah.
I don't know in what world he's going and Bergamasco is going to beat and Gwenya for a head start. Here's one of the top three quickest rugby players of all time. Up against basically a reversing dump truck.
Yeah. A reversing dump truck with no tyres on.
Yes.
With no grace or decorum.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, then we've approached sort of the last 10 minutes of the match by this point. And I've only got a couple more points to talk
about. Can I throw up my one other Dick of the Day content that involves Gwenya? At one point, the USA, from their own 22, I think it's Petrie, hangs the ball quite high as their kind of clearance.
Mm-hmm.
And McLean begins to sprint on to cover it. He then slows down and walks towards it.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, volleys it.
Right.
And he volleys it straight into Zian Gwenya's arms.
I did see this, sorry, yeah.
Makes like a 10, 15, 20 metre run.
Yeah.
And there is this like, A... What a stupid idea anyway. B, why would you volley it to their best and quickest player? It's like they're setting themselves the challenge of like, okay, Mirko couldn't do this, but I'm quicker than him, surely.
Sure. And it's like, we know he's been quiet in this game, but he is still very fast.
Yeah. It doesn't make... Why not just avoid Ngwenya? Why not just get nowhere near him? Because he is extremely quick.
Yeah. And so it was off this resulting ruck, actually, of Ngwenya taking it in. Wayne Bond sticks his flag up at something.
Mm.
And Wayne, I'm sorry to say that you are misunderstood, my friend. You have misunderstood friend of the pod, Blaine Scully, here.
Mm.
And he has penalised him for allegedly kneeing Mauro Bergamasco. And
which, A, is an entirely understandable thing to do.
Sure. So he calls him over. And says, you know, you've used your knee, you need to be very careful. And Blaine's saying, look, no, I swear I've just tripped over, you know.
Yeah.
And his knee's gone somewhere near Bergamasco. That's all it is. And Bergamasco obviously then starts a fight with Blaine Scully then. Blaine, not interested in having a fight, because very nice guy. Todd Clever then, as the referee turns away after having penalised Blaine, he says, I'm going to go talk to their player as well, just about fighting and whatever. And Todd Clever just very loudly screams, you've got to be kidding me! Because he knows how nice a guy Blaine Scully is, that he'd never do that.
Yeah.
And then George Clancy goes over to Bergamasco and sort of tells him off, like, look, don't fight, whatever. And Bergamasco goes, yeah, sure, that's fine.
No, he's so gotten away with it. Yeah.
Because it's like,
but he seems really up for it. Like,
of course he's the one who's in the wrong.
There is that kind of, you shouldn't penalise players on reputation and so on and so forth. But you look at that fight, and I guess we didn't know Blaine Scully because he kind of hated food caps for the USA coming into this.
Yeah, young kid.
And there was this thing he said in between the USA's last game and this game. that he really wanted to try and get a contract in Europe, and that would be the big aim from the World Cup, was to get a contract in Europe out of this. He kind of put himself in the shop window and so on. And good on him for saying that, and it worked. Leicester signed him a few months later. So it's fantastic, yeah. But very much you're going, if Bergamasco is having a fight, Bergamasco started that fight.
Sure,
because Bergamasco loves a fight.
He is the twat out of him and Blaine Scully. Like, I think we all know that.
The only player, the only other winger that Bergamasco's never tried to fight was Anguena, because he couldn't catch him.
Oh, man. Yeah, Mirko Bergamasco, a very confusing character, as we know.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a moment. And as I say, Wayne, you've misunderstood our friend Blaine. Yeah. So there's only... I mean, there's another point where Chris Wiles puts in this kick for Blaine Scully to chase, and he very nearly grounds it over the try line. But
McLean
gets to it millimetres before him. And I mean, do you want to rattle off any other Dick of the Day contenders before we talk about the other thing that happened in the match?
I've got two left, one of which I assume is about the other contender in the match. The other thing in the match, and the other Dick of the Day contender I think I'll save back. So I'm just saying, is there anything else? Oh yeah, so when Sanyula goes off, Miles Harrison mentions that he said that he has been suffering from a head cold.
Yeah.
What's a head cold?
What's a head cold? Has he been, like, shoving his head in the freezer overnight?
It makes sense with decision-making, doesn't it? He's gone, we need to keep cool heads. And so he's been working with it. It just means a common cold, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Just he's got a cold. Which isn't a... None of that is good. Don't play if you've got a bad enough cold that it deserves mentioning.
Yeah.
I played a game once with a really bad cold, because it was like my first start when I just started playing and so on. And I was very ill, and it was not easy to make tackles when you're kind of properly, shaking.
I can remember my first game as captain, I'd just had a cold, and I'd, nearly lost my voice. It was my first senior game as captain, and I was just thinking, God, I've got to salvage this somehow. And I can remember having to do, funnily enough, Man of the Match and Dick of the Day in the bar after the game, and no one could hear me, because I'd lost my voice.
Oh, man.
Which is just a nightmare. Because at that point, you not only need to earn the respect of your players, but all of the old men drinking in the bar as well.
So they
think, oh, yeah, we like this third team captain, or as I was back then. Yeah.
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 It's a tough afternoon out at the office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, should we move on to Man of the Match and Dick of the Day?
Should we cover that other event from the game, or are you going to cover that as a...
Yeah, I guess that's a natural segue.
Yeah,
there's just one guy that keeps coming back to haunt me in this World Cup.
I know,
and I just don't get it, because I really like rugby, and I really like tries, and it's just penalty tries keep coming back, and I just don't like them.
He can't help it, can he? This guy, Mr. P. Try, he's constantly turning up uninvited at this bloody Rugby World Cup. Look, and I don't mean to be mean about the guy, but he's just such a massive buzzkill, and he's so obnoxious. Like, everyone else wants to score a try, and he always has to rip it off them and do it himself.
Yeah.
He's like the kid in school, right, who was bullied and was left out and everything, but doesn't help himself and is really nasty and horrible to everyone. And he kind of like, I want to help you, but I can't, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I remember there was I don't know why I'm telling this story. There was a kid who went to my school who got bullied, and as an antidote for that, he decided one day to write a Facebook status, which he called "List of People Who Bully Me in School," and he just put this list of 40 people in there. And obviously, the very next day, I turned up and saw two of the people on that list beating the shit out of me. They were the hardest kids in the year. And he tagged them as well. He didn't just write the names. He actually tagged these people. And it was just kind of like, dude, I like you. I don't want you to get bullied. But, you did not help yourself there.
It's just a silly thing to do, isn't it? It's just, I don't know.
So basically, comparing that kid to penalty tries, but...
No, it's more like there was a kid in my year at school who, again, did not. And, I was one of my year's punching bags, you know? A very bottom rung of the ladder. I was bottom three.
Yeah.
And one of the two below me, I was one day trying to be quite nice to in a maths lesson, because he was sat on the same table as me.
Yeah.
And then I asked if I could borrow his ruler for a moment while he wasn't using it. And he said, no, get lost. And I thought, okay, never mind. Right, okay, there's a reason you're here, mate. Let's leave this one.
Yeah.
That kid is penalty try.
Yeah, for sure.
No one likes him. And he's nasty.
And he's a
and vindictive.
Dick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this podcast does not condone bullying. Anyway, just had to get that out of the way for the sake of formalities. So other dicks of the day.
He does not condone bullying unless endorsed by Razzy Erasmus.
Of course, of course. Other dicks of the day. Frankly, it's just kind of penalty try, Wayne Barnes and the Sanula brothers for me.
Wayne Barnes for penalising Blaine Scully.
Yes.
Yeah.
And wait, was it Wayne Barnes who yellow carded Blaine? Oh, it was Nigel who yellow carded Blaine Scully in the previous game.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Never mind. So my dick of the day is going to go to Andrew Sanula.
Andrew
for his
cool.
lack of a tackle attempt on Okwara and other things.
Okay, so I've left one of my dick of the day contenders out. I've named the other 10 out of the 11. I have not mentioned one of them. So, this game on YouTube, I want to say as well, right, the Mad for Rugby guy who's a Glasgow fan.
Legend.
What a hero.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's uploaded most of the random obscure pool game from this World Cup to YouTube.
Mad for Rugby 99. Legend.
Yeah,
he's a lifesaver for this podcast.
Oh, mate, I can't express it. I can't express how much I appreciate that guy, right?
Yeah.
But because he uploaded all these games in 2012, they're all, obviously, because it was so long ago, it was back when YouTube would only allow you to upload 15-minute video maximum.
Yeah.
Back before they kind of got rid of that limit. You know, back before that was 10 minutes, it was a kind of brief period when it was 15. So yeah. They're all uploaded in, it's part 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever.
Yeah. That's how you count.
And, yeah. Perfect counting. And I, the scores of the year backwards, the parts of the year backwards. So I was watching these, and normally it comes up and it starts autoplaying the next one, you know, and sometimes you think, oh, it's a great moment in between to start, you know, to get a drink or whatever, as they're kind of refreshing. With 5 seconds, you've got to wait between each one's auto starting the next one. And so I got to about part 5, and it was about to move on to part 6. It was quite a key moment in the game, like the ball was being spread wide as it happened, as the change between parts happens. And instead, it started auto-playing one of my videos. So, my dick of the day is Squidge Rugby.
Squidge Rugby. What a dick.
Well, it's...
He's
my dick of the
dick
day
of
under normal
every day we're not recording this podcast.
Yes. My dick of the day would be Squidge Rugby, but for the fact that Leonardo Gherardini disallowed a try from his own team.
Fair enough.
Under any other circumstances, I would be dick of the day.
Yeah, what valour for you to not give yourself dick of the day.
I know, but I really wanted to. I am a desperate coward, as ever.
Yeah, I reckon we should ask that guy who sat next to you in a maths lesson who he would give dick of the day.
He will have forgotten me. Most people probably have.
But have you forgotten Leonardo Gherardini as well?
Well, that is the other side. The other reason I want to give it is for the sheer symmetry, because Gherardini is also my man of the match.
Oh, okay. That's fair enough. I mean, my man of the match is kind of split because, I mean, I've got to mention Paul Emmerich because he was supercharged in this game. Every time he got to the ball, he was charging people back and he was putting in huge shots in defence. And this was one of his, I think this was his sixth to last game for the USA, but I think he knew it was his last World Cup game is the point.
Sure.
And so he really put in a statement for himself and he really fought to make up for Sanula's errors a lot of the time. And honestly, he did such a good job. So he's one of them. But frankly, I've got to give it to Castro.
Yeah.
Because he just completely destroyed the USA scrum. And as you say, he was great in the loose as well. Scored his try really well. Nearly scored his other one, if not for his hooker. So yeah, Castro is my man of the match.
I can't argue with that. Castro was phenomenal. And it was kind of a two-horse race almost.
Yeah.
And I think Gherardini was really good around the park.
Yeah.
And I think Castro carries well and he scrummages really well, but he is not interested in making tackles. Whereas Gherardini is always involved in all of it.
That's fair.
And every time I'd kind of look up and I'd kind of take a focus on the Italian defence, it was Gherardini making a tackle. He makes two breaks. You know, he keeps popping up and making great carries.
Yeah.
He was everywhere. Plus, he was part of that front row that absolutely destroyed them. So it didn't feel like I was... It didn't feel like I was ignoring the fact that so much of that game was decided by the scrum. You know, Castro was the absolute cornerstone of it and deservedly got man of the match. I can't argue with that at all.
No,
but yeah, Gherardini for me.
Yeah, that's fair.
Motum.
And so we say goodbye to the USA. Are we running the music today?
I haven't got any music.
No, let's not do
ready.
Music.
No, we need music. We need music.
Okay.
Name a song that's happy
that's
in
American.
That.
It's American.
Oh, hold on.
Okay, so this is the USA's leaving party now. So
yes. Welcome all.
I really enjoyed.
Whoa! I became Mario there.
I really enjoyed the USA in this World Cup, I've got to say.
I did.
I think them and, we'll come on to obviously the Canadian counterparts, but they both kind of shocked me in this World Cup. And watching them back, I think there's been a lot to say for them. I think that players of the tournament, I mean, Mike McDonald's been fantastic, Todd Clever, Chris Wiles, Paul Emmerich have been great. But I've got to say, partly as the sentimental reason, Blaine Scully is my player of the tournament. And like, I honestly, it's one thing that I... When I think back on the things we've done on this podcast, having Blaine Scully on is something that I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to talk to him, as he's one of my favourite players ever. That's, I probably say that about a lot of players, but it's certainly in terms of the players playing in this tournament, you know, he's very much top of the list or thereabouts for players that, you know, if we could have spoken to anybody from this tournament, having him on, it's just something I'm very grateful for. So, yeah, I know, Blaine, it's unlikely you've listened this far into the podcast, if at all. But if you are, then my sincere gratitude to you for coming on.
No, I will echo pro Blaine Scully sentiments as the official podcast spirit animal, Blaine Scully. And he is fantastic. As a young player, he kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I didn't know much. I'd seen him play in the I'd watched those Churchill Cup games he played in. But I wasn't paying much attention.
No, you know,
they were kind of on like
just
Wednesday
another player
nights
at
when
that
I was.
Point, isn't he? Until you realise how good he is.
I remember actually doing homework whilst watching one of those games. But it was during this World Cup where you went, actually, he's a really good young player.
For sure.
Yeah, and clearly Leicester thought the same thing. And especially when he comes out and he's so ambitious and saying, I want to play overseas. I want a contract out of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, all for it. I obviously love Blaine Scully. I think he's fantastic. I thought Todd Clever, we didn't mention, had a really good game in this
Yeah,
match,
he did.
Against Italy. Because he was sort of quiet in the other... He was very good, but he wasn't quite his kind of bombastic self that you come to expect. It's like, he is the face of American rugby. And he kind of proved that. I was like, no, actually, I'm doing everything. I'm bashing everyone over. And I'm making these tackles. And I'm smashing their scrum half, who Paris seems to think is massive. So, very good.
And I mean, dig the tournaments, Anderson Mueller, they're done dusted.
Oh, yeah. No, and I mean, like, there's plenty of, you know, Wiles kind of stands up for who he is, you know, is like the most established player playing every week in the Premier League, Saracens at this point. And Gwenny doesn't get the space he did 4 years ago or he had been doing for Biarritz, which is a shame. Paul Emmerich, I think, is fantastic throughout. And whenever he gets the ball, he's basically just causes such chaos.
Yeah.
Like, he's fantastic. I've said fantastic a lot, but there we go. Mike McDonald is great at everything that isn't scrummaging. But I think my USA player of the tournament is Mike Petrie.
Oh, that's a great shout. Yeah, he's great. Yeah. Yeah, really good little player.
So I've kind of raved about him every time, every episode except this one,
yeah,
about how great he was in this World Cup. And because I kind of remembered him as being like a solid, okay scrum half.
Yeah.
And actually, he was so good and he gave so much shape and so much organisation to that USA team.
Yeah.
Everything you could want for a scrum half, he was there. You know, he was just like the image model of a scrum half.
Yeah.
He took his try against Russia really well. And then from there on out was just so solid and reliable.
No, that's a great shout. Yeah.
Very, very good. So he's my USA player of the Rugby World Cup 2011.
Right. Yeah, we don't need to talk about Dick of the tournament, especially Blaine Scully is listening. Yeah, anything else from you?
I don't know. Oh, there is one other thing. One other thing that happens in this match, right? At one point, I think it's actually whilst the conversation about penalising Blaine Scully is happening. Right?
Right.
Wayne Barnes is having a chat with George Bloody Clancy, to give him his full middle name.
Mm-hmm.
Not Hanson, it's Bloody.
Yeah.
And in the background, you can see the girl holding the boom mic, who looks a lot like someone I was at uni with. And so I kind of clocked him, like, oh, she looks like a girl I was at uni with. And then she slightly, sort of awkwardly looks at the big screen, sees herself, and then tries to duck out of frame. Instead, moves herself more centrally, so she's now more clearly in shot. And she then continues holding the boom mic on the sideline, you know, for the crowd and the pitch sound effects or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then she kind of looks back over the big screen and sees, oh shit, I went in the wrong direction. Runs back up to the side.
Christ.
Just amuse me. Just
No, for sure. No, thank you. I mean, that's a 12th Dick of the Day contender, if ever I heard one.
She's
in 12th place. Yeah.
So, is that us? Are we good?
I think so, yeah.
So, in the week since the last podcast, unfortunately, Zebra haven't signed Chad Plato, but also they have.
They have
signed. I mean, Chad Plato has
signed
for Zebra. But he's not on their squad. Yes. So someone has updated the Wikipedia page to
no
say
idea who did that.
Chad Plato, yeah. Trevor Zebra. Which is exciting and funny. Any other business to close out?
I don't think so.
I'm not asking you, I'm asking the lawyers.
Oh, sorry, lads.
Yeah. Cardi isn't here this week, which is a shame. Carly. Not Matt Cardi. Matt Cardi's not here.
Cardi B's not here.
Oh man. What if they did a crossover?
What if Matt Cardi got with Cardi B.
Matt Cardi B, yeah.
Yeah.
Could we get them together? What do you think their crossover would sound like? Wet ass premiership.
Yeah. I have no follow up to that.
Whistle ass, no.
No. I'm done.
What would Dan Bigger say to Matt Cardi B?
You're thinking of Matt Cardi.
This is why.
Not Matt Cardi. I'm thinking of Welsh one cap wonder fullback Matt Cardi.
Didn't Matt. No, yeah, I'm thinking of Matt Cardi. Matt Cardi is who I was thinking of, yeah. Didn't Matt Cardi win the X Factor years ago?
Matt Cardle,
right. Who's Matt Cardi then?
Matt Cardi.
You said one cap wonder.
One cap wonder. Played fullback for the Dragons?
Matt Cardi is such an obscure Welsh player that stock images and... Oh, there's a photographer. Right, okay. Comes up before him. He doesn't come up on the first five pages of his Wikipedia, or first three pages of his whatever.
Cardey.
Yeah, I found him. He was a Granny Gate player. Yeah, won one cap for Wales in 2000. Played for Newport, Caernarfon and Leeds Tykes.
Yeah, fair play. And is now married to Cardi B.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah. That's canon. Wow,
okay. Do you want to know the first thing that comes up after his Wikipedia pages? A Scarlet Beaver post on the worst Welsh 15 ever.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
Do you want to drop a couple of names?
No, that one's completely unfair. No, as in just I was reading through the campaign. Other names coming up. Derwin Jones is coming up a lot.
Right.
Andy Allen. Paul John. Kerry Jones. Lyndon Musto, I've never heard of. There's some Richard Diplock, man.
Who's that? Who's Richard Diplock?
He was in Rugby 04.
Huh. I don't remember him at all.
But there's a lot of chat of Matt Cardi.
I think we're done here.
I solidly think we are. Please, if you haven't been too put off, join us next time when the game is Georgia against Romania.
God.
Which I remember being phenomenally boring.
Yeah, me too. So I've no idea what we're going to talk about next episode, but hey, maybe give us something to talk about by leaving us some Deacon Marley fanfiction, maybe?
Please, we'll find something. We're well through the pool stages, we're getting towards the end of it now. We have 8 more pool games to talk about.
Okay, that's it. Terrifying that we're that close, but also very exciting. We're getting towards the business end, as Steve Walsh would call it. So yeah, thank you all for listening, if you have... at all anybody listened. That wasn't a sentence, but yeah.
No, thank you very much, and we will see you next time for some desperate chat that may involve Georgia against Romania.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.